I can never tell on these YouTube recordings of old RCA Victrolas what the spottiness, if it's from the YouTube bit or if it's from the original recording.
Probably original. This sounds like an original recording.
Yeah. Yeah. But YouTube is also terrible.
You know, the guy's got that.
Yeah.
That's what good singing was back then.
Yeah, this is Van and Schneck singing a song called Me and My Gal.
Oddly enough, that was a stage name.
So, oh, wow. They just showed a picture of Van and Schneck. It's two men.
Hey, hold on. That's a woman, man.
Yeah, maybe the songwriters are men? Yeah, it's definitely a woman singing.
Yeah.
A man and a woman.
No, it's not like a Frankie Valli type falsetto.
No, no. A song called For Me and My Gal is not a song that two guys would do. But I guess Van and Schneck are the songwriters?
No, maybe it's like one man is bragging about his gal.
Okay.
To another man.
Yeah.
You know. And the third verse is his friend punching.
Maybe it wasn't originally a duet, and they just decided to duet it up. Did you watch Glee when it was on?
No.
They would do that. They would just decide, like, a song is a duet. So I distinctly remember they took the Lady Gaga song...
I can't concentrate.
Okay. They took the Lady Gaga song Poker Face.
Yes.
And decided this is going to be a charming, heartwarming mother-daughter duet. As they look over the piano and sing Poker Face to each other. Poker Face is a song about having sex. It is not a song for mothers and daughters.
You think it's about oral sex? Like poking someone in the face? Like,
I didn't think about that.
I didn't either until just now.
Until just now.
Your kids are asleep, right? They can't hear me say that, right?
They're upstairs, but they're not asleep.
All right. Are these walls thin? I feel bad.
Say it louder to make sure that they're coming. Welcome to the 1917 podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan, and with me as always is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy, hoy, Jeff.
Ahoy, hoy, Vinny. And we have a special guest with us this week, Vinny's dog.
That's right, Ruby the dog.
Yes, I am dog sitting.
Yeah, she was abducted by your daughter, though.
Yes, she's upstairs now with the dog, so you won't be hearing the dog this week.
Yep, I'm going to be going away.
Yep.
You know, this is pre-recorded, so, like, you know, if you know where I live, don't come rob me. I'll be there. All right? Yeah, so we're going away to for the night to Sesame Place.
Excellent.
And Jeff here is stepping and watching the dog.
Yep. I've picked up the dog and brought it upstairs, and as I mentioned to Vinny before, it's like picking up a very, very large bread bowl.
Hey, she's a pug. They're dense. They're very dense.
They are.
You know, that's how they're built. They're built to last. But to be dropped by children. Your daughter almost killed her.
Wait, built to last? That sounds like a tonka. When I think of small dogs, I don't think of...
Pugs have to be built to last physically because every other part of their anatomy is meant for death. They can't breathe. They can't see.
Their faces are totally flat.
Yeah, they're not meant for this world. Yeah. So they at the very least, they have to, like... You know, you can drop them from a height. And
yeah, nowhere else in nature, other than maybe like a Garfield sticky toy, is there a totally flat face.
And hers is particularly flat, too. It's like straight 90-degree angle head.
Yeah.
That she has. I hope you do a good job there.
I can promise when you come back in 2 days' time, you will have the dog.
You had a dog as a child, right?
I had a number of dogs, yeah. Yeah, we started off with Jason and Bo. Now, this is confusing because we adopted two dogs at the same time. And one of the standard questions on...
By the way, Jason is a very odd name for a dog.
The whole litter was named after characters from the Waltons. So John Boy would be a great name for a dog. But Jason, one of the other sons...
Or like Pa.
Yeah. Or other Walton. I didn't watch the Waltons.
Me neither.
I did do enough research to rule them out as someone to talk about in 1917. The Waltons started in, like, the late 70s, but they took place in the 20s, and it moved all the way up to World War II. But there's no 1917 for the Waltons.
I still remember at my school, an older teacher, I just walked by him one time, and this guy's probably in his 60s, and I just sort of snippet a conversation, him talking to a 16-year-old Puerto Rican kid, and saying, "You mean you've never seen the Waltons?" He was incredulous.
You have told that story on this podcast before.
Have I?
Yes.
I'll edit this out.
Yeah.
How am I going to know everything I tell?
Why? Yeah, yeah. We've been doing this for 29 weeks now.
Yeah, it's like 29 hours of talking. Yeah, all right.
But think about that. You've talked for 29 hours, and this is what's come up twice.
The Waltons.
The Waltons.
You mentioned Jason. Do we talk about Jason the dog?
Maybe that's how we pivoted to it last time, yeah.
All right, well, you've heard this before, people. Just bear with us or fast forward.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember, really. What do you want from me?
Now, what I was going to say with my two dogs, Jason and Bo, was that there's a standard security question. What was the name of your first pet? I got two pets at the same time. And I don't want to diminish the memories of Bo by picking Jason.
It seems like Jason's the one you liked more, though.
We got rid of Bo. I had a very awkward conversation when I was like 4 years old.
I picture you then did the... remember Jimmy Stewart had his horrible poem about his dog on the Tonight Show?
Oh, I know. I never saw that.
He had a poem like called My Dog Bo.
Uh-huh.
And like he would go on the Tonight Show. He was like, oh, I got my poems here. And...
I'm imagining if he was a comedian or just an actor now, it would be a gag.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so yeah, Jimmy Stewart, and he talks about his this is like awful poem that like seems like it probably could have been written by like a second grader.
Okay.
You know, Bo is a pretty easy name to rhyme too.
Yeah. And it rhymed?
Yeah.
Like Bo rhymed with things?
Yeah. Maybe I'll do it next week's show.
Next week's show,
I'll do a performance of My Dog Bo.
Wow.
And it ends with Johnny Carson, feigning tears. And the audience feigning applause. Well, no, I don't think... It's Jimmy Stewart pouring his heart out. Even if it's lame, you're going to like that he's doing it.
Right.
You know, he built up enough goodwill.
Right. You can't be too upset with sincerity, even if there's not a huge amount of artistry behind this.
Yeah, and people like Jimmy Stewart, so, right. they'll stand for it.
Right.
You know, they're not going to put up with that from, any actor. Eric Estrada can't go on a TV show and do that.
I remember having a conversation with my wife. She was saying that David Duchovny was not allowed to cry on camera anymore because he wasn't convincing. And we talked it out. And the reason why he wasn't convincing was because he was actually crying on camera. And the way he cries for real looks fake. It looks like bad acting.
So I'm pretty sure it would be like a Peanuts character where he puts his head back and the fountain of tears that comes from the sides.
it was more just sort of pathetic. He cried like he had been kicked in the crotch. So he's just kind of rolling around on the ground and he's lost all motor control. And maybe that's what really would happen if something devastating happened to you. But cinematically, it just looks like he's had the wind knocked out of him and he's being a baby.
You know what? I feel the same way about if you ever go see a play, on stage deaths.
Mm. Yeah.
They always look bad. Everybody's just like, all right, I'm going to go die. I walk off stage and then die. And then they come out, oh my God, he's dead. But anytime someone dies, in Shakespeare, there's always a lot of onstage death.
Yeah.
It never looks, it always looks a lot like, oh God, no way.
Yeah. I heard there's an interesting irony about dying on stage because a lot of films are made from stage productions.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other way around, a lot of stage productions become films. Most films don't have anything to do with the stage. But when someone dies on stage, they then come out at the end of the 3 hours and take a bow. And you know that it's fake.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see someone die in a movie, they don't come back. So because of that, it feels more real. And one of my favorite movies is Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, okay. And yes. The big difference between...
Yes, everyone dies at the end of Little Shop of Horrors, but that didn't work in the movie. And in stage, it does, because it's okay if people die, because 2 minutes later, they all are taking their vows.
Mm-hmm.
But in a movie, when someone dies, you feel like they're dead. Even if it was just like an off-screen death, which is what this was. So aspiring screen.
Now, I remember, because I saw the movie Little Shop of Horrors first.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I was a kid, I went to see a musical version.
Oh, you were surprised.
And I was like, plot twist. What the hell's going on here? Why are they dying?
That must be great, because you were truly surprised. You didn't know going on.
No, I had no idea. No, it's just, that was a very big movie when we were kids.
Yeah. Yeah, that was huge. Mm-hmm. I just showed it to the kids a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some scenes we probably should have fast-forwarded through. I forgot that Steve Martin was basically torn into chunks and then wrapped in newspaper and carried around in a trash barrel.
Your kids are what, 10 and...
They're 11 and 8.
At what age do you get to watch that?
See, I thought, like, well, that's clearly not Steve Martin. That's clearly just dummy arms. Oh. But they're close enough to honest emotion and opinion that it was horrifying that the character that they liked was chopping someone
up. Well, I think that you should be given a list of things when you have a kid. And it's like, all right, at 7 years old...
That's a good idea.
Then, yeah. You know, like, at 7 years old, then, like, no one gets to see each other naked anymore.
Yeah.
At 9 years old, you can see a movie with some cursing in it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. At, you know, 12, we could wear makeup or something. Like all little things that we don't think about. Like,
I've thought a lot about, like,
when I pretty much know that R-rated yeah, like, they're allowed to smoke cigarettes at 18. That's all I know.
It's 21 now.
Is it 21 now?
They just passed a rule, like, 2 weeks ago.
Oh, see, mark
yeah.
this down.
Yeah, mark it down.
The one thing I knew, I no longer know, Jeff.
No, but I think, like, every year there should be a new suite of R-rated movies that you're allowed to see. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're 14, I think it's perfectly fine for you to see The Matrix. There's just a couple of people being shot and maybe one or two bad words. But 14 is the perfect age to see it. 18 is too old. Mm-hmm. By the time you're 18, it's not cool anymore.
Yeah, there's nothing that will, yeah. You know, it's not going to do anything for you. You've already established your other sort of
things. Right. When you're 15, that's when you bring in Spinal Tap and Stand By Me and things yes. like that. Stand By Me should be every kid's first R-rated movie.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, it's perfect.
I think I saw
it. It's a perfect R-rated movie.
I was probably about like sixth grade when I saw it. And yeah. I was like, yeah. I actually remember the first R-rated movie I saw in theaters.
Oh, what was that?
Good Morning Vietnam.
Okay, that's interesting because there is a little bit of violence, but it's mostly cursing and yeah. content. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, what kid doesn't love Bruno Kirby?
He is one of the best parts of that film.
He's one of the best actors ever.
Yeah.
I love him.
Oh, that scene from City Slickers, the best day, worst day scene, that'll rip your heart out.
I'm thinking of Spinal Tap, too. He's,
that's right. Yeah. Yes, I can, if Frank Sinatra says.
And he has there's a deleted scene you should check out, too.
Yeah, you think I haven't seen the deleted scenes?
I know. Yeah. As far as I say things for the audience, not just for you.
Okay, yeah, that's true enough. I forget sometimes that we're holding microphones. Which,
for example, when you tell a lot of these stories, mm-hmm. I'm just pretending to not know what's going on.
I know. I'm well aware you're playing the fool.
I am. Sometimes I'm like, oh, Jeff, tell me more. Because it would be weird if you're like, oh, what level to this? I'm like, yeah, I know.
Yeah,
and then we just shut it down from there.
Or if you just immediately tried to change the subject. Boy, you've been talking about World War I a long time. How would we talk about something else? But we should start to talk about World War I a little bit. And we will pivot to that via our sponsor this week, which is the World War I New Testament Soldier's Field Bible mm-hmm. from 1917, made in Oxford, England. It's inscribed from the Greer Boatwright Company. You can buy a copy of this on Etsy. I guess Etsy works as like an eBay also.
I think it's Etsy.
Etsy?
Etsy. Maybe right. I can't remember. Is it Etsy? I don't know. Maybe there's a rival.
You know, no, it's because I know someone named Betsy, and Betsy is spelled bestie. So I've learned when I see...
Betsy's not spelled bestie.
It's not?
No.
I got it. I've been getting it wrong like double. I said Estee a lot, and it's now written in my head.
No, it's Betsy's Betsy. Uh-huh.
Oh, it is Betsy. But I'm saying Bestie?
Let's say I'm all mixed up. I'm your friend. Hi, okay. Jeff. Hello.
Hi, Betsy. How are you doing?
Just said Betsy. Okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. Spelled like you said it. Betsy. It's not spelled Bestie.
I don't. Why did I think that?
I don't know.
Why?
Have you been saying this for years?
More than years, decades. This is going back before I even met the one Betsy I know. Oh, it's something I never thought about. But I assumed that I had thought about. And like in 1987, it's like, well, I thought that thought. I'm going to lock that off and I'm going to wall it off. Bestie. That's how it's spelled. Never need to open up this reference book. It's totally solid. We're just going to keep it and assume it's right.
Yeah, I'll write them down, this paper here, so you can look at the... Because I have a feeling you don't 100% believe me.
I never 100% believe you. Okay. I think that it may be a
look
cat.
Look at these two words.
Okay.
B-E-T.
Betsy.
Betsy.
Yeah.
The other one?
The other one is bestie, like you're my best friend.
Yes.
Yes. You're not, but... Just mm-hmm. You're close.
You're watching my dog, Jeff.
Yeah.
I only trust the closest to people.
We're close. We're definitely close, but mm-hmm. I have a twin brother. So the best friend thing is taken.
Mm-hmm. My best friend is my dog, Ruby. I'm trusting you with.
Are you sure it's a dog? Because I had a cat theory. Okay. So, the World War I New Testament of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Soldier's Field Bible, owned by World War II veteran Greer B. Boatwright. Oh, I got it wrong. Greer Boatwright is the former owner of the Bible, not the company that makes it. It's translated out of the original Greek, and with the former translations diligently compared and revised by His Majesty's Special Command. I guess that was something that they did. You need to make your Bible unique. So they found ways of emphasizing the soldierliness. So
I imagine that this Bible, mm-hmm. metal, you wear it over your heart.
That is why I started to look this up. I was hoping that there were like World War I soldiers' Bibles that worked as like, you know, wear it over your heart and stops a bullet.
Yeah.
There aren't. But because people were carrying around Bibles in World War I, every once in a while someone would get shot and it would slow down the bullet. Enough so then World War II, they did start to sell Bibles in like steel jackets. Mm-hmm. And they were specifically designed to stop bullets. These, unfortunately, aren't there yet.
What if you're not religious? Can you just get like a piece of metal and wear it over your heart?
Or you could just get like a random book.
Yeah, it can be anything, really.
Yeah. This is the Winnipeg phone book, but I wear it over my heart because it's thicker than the Bible.
Who knew so many people live in Winnipeg? We got the best of high and lowest here. Always worn over my heart.
If you're wondering about the colors, this book is in camel tan cloth, soft cover wraps with gilt U.S. flag on front cover and gilt title on the spine with a red satin ribbon placeholder. It's available for you, I don't know, like $15, $15-$20, and you can get a 100-year-old Bible.
Why is this person selling on Etsy, not eBay?
I don't know.
Etsy's where you make it yourself.
Up until about 7 minutes ago, I didn't know how to pronounce the name of the website, so I'm not an authority.
So I'm guessing it says making Bibles.
I don't think you can make 100-year-old Bibles. Although, if you could...
It's probably a reproduction. Maybe he writes it. Maybe he's like a monk.
Transcribing. This is a perfect segue for one of the stories I wanted to talk about, which is the death this week, 100 years ago today, of François Fournier. François Fournier, to say in not a French accent. Mm-hmm. He was a famous stamp forger who lived in France. What he would do, this is when stamp collecting was a big thing, he would get an old stamp and he would make as close to an exact copy as he could. He's basically making a forgery. But he claimed that he wasn't doing it to sell to people. He wasn't doing it to try to, like, you know, draw what would be a 200-pound stamp and then sell it to someone. Mm-hmm. He was making it, and then when he would sell it to someone, he'd make it clear it's a piece of art, like an expert reproduction, so that they could have this valuable stamp in their house without having to pay for the price of the valuable stamp.
So he sold them at you know, the low rate.
A low rate, higher than the list price of the stamp, which is, you know, like 3 centimes.
But he wasn't trying to pass it off as the stamp.
No, but the thing is, he was very popular and he was very good. And lots of people who said, oh yeah, I really love stamps and I'd really love a $200 stamp in my collection, so can you make a stamp that looks like $200 for me, would then sell the stamp for mm-hmm. $200, as you would guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really no different than like the guys who were pirating movies and saying, I'm just making one copy for my personal collection, like a backup copy in case mine gets deleted, and I just happen to put it online because it's just more convenient for me that way.
Did you ever get into like buying bootleg movies?
In the 90s, but it was mostly Hong Kong movies that weren't imported over here. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, some were good. I got ripped off on a couple.
Yeah?
There was a couple where they just set up a camera in the movie theater.
Oh, yeah, I definitely saw one of those. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw Denzel Washington movie, The Hurricane. I saw The Hurricane that way. And I thought that was purposely designed to look like it was like a scummy 70s disgusting movie.
With a laugh track.
And a guy who got up to pee about 45 minutes in. But then when I actually saw the real movie instead of my dingy VHS copy, it was like, oh, this is actually a handsome movie. Mm-hmm. I thought it was purposely designed to look like a grindhouse film.
That's just because Denzel's in it.
But that taught me my lesson. Just wait another couple of months if you want to see a high quality
movie. You ever click stamps?
I thought about it. And I have a...
I would have bet money that you did, so I'm surprised that you did not. I've lost on this.
I inherited my great uncle's stamp collection, which sounds like the beginning of a DuckTales episode. And I looked into seeing if it was valuable, because at the time, when I got it, I thought, oh, wow, this has got to be worth $1 million. And it's not.
Mm-hmm.
One of the downsides about no one caring about the stamp collecting is that there aren't people to buy stamps anymore.
Was it in his will?
No.
That you got it? Or was his widow just like, oh, I got this fucking thing. Here you go.
That was exactly it, except give a Rhode Island accent and make her sound like
that. That was my Rhode Island accent.
That was a Rhode Island accent? You know, that actually sounds closer to a Rhode Island resident than my great aunt, who sounded like Katharine Hepburn.
So yeah, so she just wanted to, you were looking at like unloading.
Yes. Yeah, but she just wanted it out of the house.
You still have it?
Yes, I do.
Oh, we had a future episode go through your stamp collection.
Oh, I bet I have some from 1917. Mm-hmm. We can talk about the stamps from 1917.
So the room's worthless because there's no other stamp collectors now.
Right. Now, I mean, there are actually lots of stamp collectors around the world, but they are not collecting for value.
Mm-hmm.
They are collecting for, I forget what they would call it, but let's say, because I'm looking at fruit right now, let's say you want to buy lots of fruit stamps. So you try to get all the banana stamps in the world and all the apple stamps and all the grape stamps.
You mean the little ones that go on the fruit?
No.
Like the ones that, like the Dole.
The Dole ones.
Yeah.
The Chiquita banana.
Yeah.
Or if you're interested in boats, you try to get boats, or you try to get one from every country of the world, and none of them are worth more than like 45 cents. So the hard part is that there's hundreds of stamps from each one of these countries every year. So it's just a lot of work to find them.
This is off topic. We were talking about inheriting something from your uncle.
Yeah.
And so we're working with this one very hacky comic.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I can't say his name because, like, comics listen to this. And he said to me, we're in the green room, he's like, so I'm working on a screenplay. It's really, really good. But there's something I got to talk to a lawyer about because I want to make sure it's accurate. And I'm like, well, what is
this? This is such a great setup. Like, I almost don't want to know the end of it because it's such a great setup.
If somebody leaves you a carnival in their will, do you have to take it? Like, can you refuse to take the carnival?
Like, that was going to be the sticking point?
This brilliant screenplay he's writing about. A guy who has to inherit a carnival. I want to make sure it's legally accurate.
So I have this fantastic idea that is in no way inspired by a Scooby-Doo episode.
I tell myself, well, yeah, just, I guess, find a lawyer. Because, you know, you don't want audiences going, oh, my God, I'm not buying this.
Yeah. Now, would you go for, like, a lawyer who handles estates, or would you go for more of a carnival lawyer? He would know the carnival side of things more than the estate lawyer.
You think there's, like, a whole different, like the Carney Code would come into play?
Yes. There's different types of lawyers. There's, like, real estate lawyers. There's investment lawyers. There's carnival lawyers. There's circus lawyers, because carnivals and circuses are different. There's tax lawyers. They're skee-ball lawyers.
I kind of want to read this screenplay he had now.
I'm fascinated.
Oh my God, I got a bearded lady living with me. And I have no choice in the matter because it's legally binding.
He described it as really good. And he's in the process of writing it. It's about a guy inheriting a carnival.
Yes.
That's all you know going in. I was talking to a guy today who was trying to write a book, and the very first thing he said was, I don't want anyone giving me notes, because, you know, they're a bunch of idiots. Like, I don't know anything about you right now, but your book is bad. I haven't written it, but your book is bad.
Yeah, as a writer, you probably... Seriously, I get people's, like, horrible jokes all the time. I get pulled aside, right. Told, like, terrible jokes, you know, that are, you know... if they're not original, they might be good. If they came up with it on their own, they're do you get people's like terrible things to read, like that they've written?
There was someone who did say, I have a screenplay idea. I don't want to tell you because, you know, I don't want to tell you unless we're going in on it together. But but I just need someone to write it.
What would be his role?
I believe his role would be cashing the $1 million paychecks that would come into his post office box every 3 months. Uh-huh. Because that's how it works. You tell someone an idea in about 45 minutes over coffee, and then they write the screenplay. You share credit with the guy, and then you get $1 million checks.
I remember doing a contact by guys like, so I have a comic I'm managing. He's a fat guy. But he has no material. He's got a great fat look. And I'm sorry, can you write some jokes for my fat guy?
It'd be funny if you did write him jokes, but you wrote like exclusively like linguistic jokes. Like he's a guy that just starts like talking about why comb is spelled with a B.
Yeah, when someone approaches you with that, you don't bother because you're like, this guy doesn't have money anyway. There's no
The actual story we're going to talk about this week, and I can't believe we've gone 26 minutes without talking about it yet, is the birth of Yugoslavia. Mm-hmm. I've been excited for this one for a while. We teased it last week by saying we're going to talk about the creation of a country. And here we go. I was very worried about getting into this because I didn't want to get the facts about Yugoslavia wrong. So I started to do research, and then I promptly stopped doing research because there is literally 5,000 years of history in Yugoslavia.
And there's a lot of research to do. Yes, you go with the idea of let's not do any research.
Well, I'm going to keep talking with words I've written down on paper. There's going to be some research involved.
Okay.
But I've found a way of bringing it into the podcast, having it be something we can talk about. And oh, there's a skunk walking by.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I got that.
That would have been terrible if I had some sort of bodily emission and that fooled you. Which I've heard some people do, but I did not. This is an actual skunk. So I am using what Little Steven from the E Street Band calls the Ramones principle, which is that when he got into music, he loved the Ramones. And when he started to research the history of rock and roll, he divided everything in the world into before the Ramones and after the Ramones. Now, the Ramones weren't the beginning of rock and roll. Chuck Berry wasn't even the beginning of rock and roll. You need to go back decades and decades. But for him, it was. Because he's himself. That's who he listened to. So someone nowadays might start listening to, I don't know, Radiohead. And Radiohead isn't the first band either. But if you listen to Radiohead, you can then trace their influences back. So Radiohead is like your pivot point, your before and after. 1917 is our before and after. So whatever is happening in 1917, that will be our pivot point. That will be the thing we talk about. So we are talking about the Pact of Corfu. The Pact of Corfu was in Corfu, Greece. And the Yugoslav Committee met there 100 years ago this week in 1917 to talk about what would happen when World War I is over. They had the sense that they were going to win, and they wanted to set up some like pipeline in order to set a good country in motion when it was all over and the fighting was done. Most of them were Croatians from the part that is currently now Croatia, and there were some Bosnians mixed in also. The idea was that Austro-Hungary, which owned them, was going to crack and fall apart, and in which case the tripartite empire would start bequeathing countries their own land if there was a stable government set up. So the Croatians and Bosnians decided if we come up with an alliance of people who are like southern Slavs, we can make our own country. We can kind of be like the United States, except instead of fighting a war for independence, there's a war being fought anyways, and we just get the country afterwards, which is better than fighting a war for independence, because the war is already happening. You're just grafting on independence after it. So Bosnia, Croatia, and Slovenia were going to band together to make this like super group of a country. Somehow, and people who are smarter than me can explain how this is. Serbia was its own country. It wasn't Austro-Hungarian, it wasn't Turkish, it wasn't owned by anyone else or Greece. It was its own country just for like 20 years. And Serbia was invaded by Austro-Hungarian troops, so they weren't having a great time of it. The troops did try their best to not be an invading army, but they kind of were. And armies need to eat, so all of the peasants' food was being taken from them, and because it's war, there was disease everywhere. So they really wanted the Austro-Hungarians out. They didn't want to be part of that empire. So they would join up with the Croatians and the Bosnians and the Slovenians to try to be Yugoslavs. Yugoslav is a Slavic word for South Slavs. I didn't know that.
Wait, so there's, why would it be the South Slavs?
Because there's the Northern Slavs, which is like everyone in Poland and
Russia. Okay, yeah, so yeah. You're in, right. That's the Czechs.
And the Czechoslovakians, yeah. So this wasn't going to be a regular country where it was just different regions. This is going to be closer to the United States, like I was saying before. So each different group would have its own boundaries and its own sort of laws, more so than a state does. Mm-hmm. So there'd be more state power and less federal power. This ended up ultimately biting Yugoslavia in the rear end, because they had more of a dictator in Marshal Tito after the war, after World War II, and he tried to hold the country together, but he didn't have enough power to do so, and the country split into its contingent
in the 90s, parts. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know most of this from the 30 for 30 about Drazen Petrovic
and Vlade
Divac. Yeah. That's the research I've done.
Yeah. I was going to add a Vlade Divac question into the Yugoslavia quiz. It'll be taking a couple of minutes. But okay. I figured he was going to come up anyways. He was my first Yugoslav.
He's probably our only Yugoslav, right?
What was George Mirison? Was he Romanian or Albanian?
I don't know. He lives around here. We should ask him.
He does?
Yeah. Or he did for a while.
Oh. I assumed that he, like moved back to whatever his home country is.
No, I'm being personal. He's going to go back there. Come on.
I bet he would live like a king.
No, I think...
That's what Dikembe Mutombo did.
For a while, he lived in North Jersey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you'd see him at the mall because, like, you know, he's easy to spot.
Yeah. Wait, did you ever meet George Mirison? Did you ever spot him?
I believe I spotted him, but yeah, I did spot him. And like, I know I've had multiple friends tell me they've spotted him as well, just walking around. I'm trying not to conflate my own memory with other people's memories. But,
I've done that.
But I've done that. Yeah, he's sort of like Danny Aiello, the way like everyone around here has met Danny Aiello.
I never met Danny Aiello.
Now you're missing out.
I am.
Mm-hmm.
I've never met any of the guys from Sopranos either, and I've been to a lot of diners. I've seen their pictures on the walls.
Really?
Yeah.
I met Johnny Sack over at Hiram's Hot Dogs.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes there all the time. Just hang out. You're going to see him.
Okay.
If you want to go on a sack hunt.
Yeah.
As they call it.
You know, I did see Polly Walnut walking down the street,
mm-hmm.
but that's because where I was walking by in New York City, they were filming a Sopranos episode. And I tried to call my friend who was a huge Polly Walnuts fan, but mm-hmm. she didn't pick up in time.
Oh no.
Oh God.
Bestie.
No, I just overwrote the memory. And it was that I was going to be late for my train if I called her, so I decided not to and just tell her the next day about it.
Oh,
so
she was angry at you.
Yeah.
Well, if you called her, what would have happened? Like, hey, he's Polly Walnuts here.
Yeah, but
like they're gonna become friends or something?
Well, we were in the same building. She could have just 2 minutes later, she could have gone downstairs. She could have met him.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew someone else who worked at the same gym that he went to.
I don't feel like it'd be that hard to meet Polly Walnuts. Like,
no,
I think minimal effort would have to be put forth.
No,
to meet him.
And the woman who worked at the gym was young and very attractive, and she said, "He's awful. He's exactly the guy who's on the show. They don't write. That's not a character. That's just who he is. He's gross."
Well, right. Don't you want, if you met Polly Walnuts, how would you want him to act?
Well, partly you would want that, but partly it would be nice if, have you ever seen Wendell Pierce, the guy who played Bunk on The Wire, being interviewed? He doesn't move like Bunk, he doesn't talk like Bunk, he doesn't comport himself like Bunk. Bunk is a complete performance by a very talented actor,
and
you would never know it.
I'd want Polly Walnuts kind of acting. I imagine it's the same thing that people went through when they, you know, when they met, like, Jean Stapleton.
Yeah. Yeah, you want her to just screech.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah. Oh, no, I was on All in the Family. Stop talking like that. Talk like Edith.
You want her to, have, like, lock herself in a closet by mistake. Should we do our quiz now?
Sure.
Yeah, okay, we'll move on to the Yugoslavia quiz.
Well, yeah, you don't want to go to Philistine without a quiz, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we have a lineup, stick with everybody.
Yugoslavia.
Yes.
Okay, you knew this question was coming. How many countries were made out of the former Yugoslavian Republic?
Let's see.
Four? He's counting. I would have taken six. I would have also taken seven.
Wow.
Yep. There were six, and then in 2008, a seventh broke off from one of the other ones.
But there's four big ones.
There are four big ones.
Yeah, the others don't really...
Yes.
Incidental.
Okay, follow-up question. You knew this one was coming, too. Name the countries.
All right, let's see. We have Slovenia.
Uh-huh. I'll cross that one off.
Okay. We have Croatia.
Yep.
We have
I've mentioned most all of these. Bosnia and Herzegovina. Good.
Mm-hmm. Is that two? Bosnia and Herzegovina? Or they won?
That's one. It counts as one. So okay. you have a count of three. You've gotten rid of Slovenia, Croatia, and Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Serbia?
Very good. Very good.
And those are the four that matter.
Those are the four big ones.
Yeah.
Yes. You have forgotten Montenegro. You have forgotten Macedonia.
I never would have thought Montenegro was there. I'll say I'm dumb on this one. I always picture I kind of always thought Montenegro being like Monte Carlo.
Yeah.
Like high rollers.
Yeah.
And, no idea where Montenegro is. You could have told me, in all honesty, you could have pulled off telling me Montenegro is in South America, and I would have bought it.
Well, there's a Montevideo in South America. Mm-hmm. That's in Uruguay. But, yeah, Montenegro is such a vague name, because it could be any Romance language.
Mm-hmm.
So you can put it anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bad name for a country. It's, and the other one was Macedonia, another terrible name for a country, because that's a real place.
Yes.
That was a real place, that was a real people, and you can't just take a tiny spit of land and call it Macedonia, and say, yeah, we're just like the people from 3,000
years ago. Yeah, we're the Macedonians now.
And finally, in 2008, there was Kosovo that joined the former Yugoslav family.
Well, I remember that, yes, that was a war and stuff.
Do you remember, during the Olympics for about 10 years, Yugoslavia wasn't around anymore, but the like contingent countries hadn't become their own country, and they marched under F when they like walked into the opening ceremonies because it was the former Yugoslav countries.
So it was just like they had like an F banner.
they just marched like between France and Fiji.
Mm-hmm. What was their flag? They have a flag even? Like a F flag?
I forget how they handled the flag, because there was a Yugoslavian flag. Which is a terrible flag, by the way. Are you ready for the Yugoslavian flag?
Sure.
Stripe of red, stripe of white, stripe of blue. That's it.
Are they horizontal or vertical?
It's horizontal. Right. Now,
so it's like reverse France, kind
of. It's like reverse France. It's like sideways Netherlands. Red, white, and blue is also the colors of the United States of America and Australia and Great Britain and basically any country in the world. It's like they looked at all the flags and said, let's make a flag that's as undistinct as possible. That looks like every other flag. And I don't know why you would do that. You can have fun with a flag.
There's a lot of colors. There's many colors in the world that you can pick from.
I'm sure there's a color that's distinct to Yugoslavia that's not red, white, or blue. Like green or purple or puce. You never see a puce flag. I don't even know what puce is.
Me neither.
Yeah. I think it's like a type of pink.
I don't know. The beautiful Puce Mountains of Montenegro.
I'm going to now ask you questions about the individual countries.
Okay.
Okay. This man is the most famous Macedonian of history. He conquered more of the world than anyone else until Genghis Khan.
Alexander the Great.
Alexander the Great. A Macedonian. This...
That's like a nice cookie. It's Macedonians.
This Bond movie was set in Montenegro.
Hmm.
Now, I may be wrong about this, because we just talked about how Montenegro sounds like Monte Carlo.
Yeah.
And, this Bond movie was set in Montenegro. Now, the mistake may be mine and was set in Monte Carlo. the mistake may be theirs, in which they meant to send it in Monte Carlo, but they wrote Montenegro in the screenplay, and then no one ever corrected them.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I guess we're going to Yugoslavia in order to gamble with French people.
All right, so I'm guessing Casino Royale.
Yes, Casino Royale.
Yeah, Monte Carlo.
Yes. The novel takes place in France. I was hoping that when I read the novel, I'd learn about the people of Montenegro, but I did not. Our current First Lady is from what former Yugoslavian country?
You think I would know this?
Yeah, this wasn't supposed to be the hard one.
Yeah, I don't know. She's a, nondescript Eastern European, I feel like.
Slovenia.
Okay.
And Donald Trump's first wife is from Slovakia. Mm-hmm. I believe the third wife happened just because he learned Slovakian, and it's like, oh, that's close enough. The Game of Thrones TV show films its King Landing scenes in what country?
Macedonia, right?
Croatia.
Oh.
That's where King's Landing is. And it's become a little tourism industry where you can see the old ruins where they have people walking around. The other scenes are filmed in Northern Ireland because you can't get cold and hot at the same time. The 1984 Winter Olympics were held in which Bosnian city?
Sarajevo?
Sarajevo, yeah. Very good. I forgot about that entirely.
I don't know how I knew that.
It was in your head. It was somewhere weird. Stuck in your head.
There's no way.
6-year-old you.
I should not know that.
I started paying attention when I was in 1984. I figured, like, this is a good year to start paying attention about the world. And I didn't learn much about the world, but you know when news is on, it's like, I don't care about this.
I don't remember the winter. I remember the Summer Olympics in 1984 because it was a big deal. It was in America. Right. And, like, because the Russians weren't there, like, we got to win everything.
Yeah, it was great. Okay, so I've asked you a question about Macedonia, Montenegro, Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia, and the only one left is Kosovo. Mm-hmm. Kosovo is ethnically 90% Albanian. Kosovo is one of the youngest nations in the world, starting in just 2008. What Beach Boys song do I have in my head right now?
Kokomo.
Yeah. Very good. Was it in your head beforehand?
No, but no. What else would it be?
Yeah. In 1937, which comic strip was banned from Yugoslavian newspapers because the regent thought it was making fun of him?
Andy Cap.
Mickey Mouse. Oh. They were doing like a Prisoner of Zenda thing where the ruler of this fake country looked just like Mickey Mouse, so he switched with the ruler. Mm-hmm. And the ruler was like a jerk, but then learned to be nice, and Mickey then made everyone love the ruler, and then they switched places back, and everyone loved the ruler, and the ruler was great.
Was this like a movie? Or a...
No, the Mickey strip was an adventure strip.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that storyline took like 4 months. But in the meantime...
4 months to do Prince and the Pauper.
Yeah. Yeah, but in the meantime...
Or Dave.
The regent of Yugoslavia, who was taking over for like the 10-year-old, who will be king when he turns 18, didn't like the fact that they were making fun of him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think Walt Disney or whoever was drawing him knew that they were making fun of him. They were just doing like a Prince and the Pauper joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like if you yell, hey, stupid, in a crowd, and someone turns around and says, hey! Like, you didn't aim it at that guy. He just assumed that you're making fun of him.
Have they reinstated Mickey Mouse since then?
I think so, yeah.
I imagine it was like a big ceremony when they brought him back.
Yeah, the Belgrade residents finally got to get their mouse back. Starting in 1977, the car company Zastava started to make Fiat-style automobiles for the world market under what name?
Yugo.
Yep. I did not know how many movies I've seen with Yugos in them, because I had a follow-up question named any movie featuring a Yugo.
I don't know. I'm sure I've seen them.
Right. It's only a plot point in, like, 3 movies. And the other times it's just like, oh, well, there's a car in the background. I guess that's a Yugo.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a small hatchback. And I saw lots of movies with small hatchbacks over the years. And sometimes they're, like, prominently put in the shot. Sometimes it's just like, well, we need a cheap car, so we'll give them a Yugo.
Well, give me one.
Okay. Did you see the comedy Drowning Mona?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They made a... It's part of the plot point that this was one of the test markets for Yugos from like 1981. So everyone is driving a 1981 Yugo. It's not a very funny movie, but it's a constant sight gag that everyone in town, no matter how rich or poor or old or young, is driving around a 1981 Yugo. There's Yugos in Cars 2 as well. Like, they go into a ghetto, and everyone living in the ghetto is a Yugo.
I've seen Cars 1. There's also Cars 2.
I only saw it one time. I didn't remember very much about it. And the most well-known one for me, the only one I knew going into it, was Die Hard 3. Because John McClane steals a car and, throws a brick of gold through a window to open it up, and then finds out that it's a Yugo when he gets upset, and then he leaves the gold bar in the car. Even though the gold bar weighs, probably weighs more than the Yugo, and is definitely worth more than the Yugo. So, we should go on to birthdays now. Having a birthday this week, 100 years ago today, is Phyllis Diller.
All
right. American comedian. Comedian extraordinaire. I know Phyllis Diller as an old lady who would make jokes about being an old lady.
I don't know much about her, to be honest with you. I always thought of her as like shitty Joan Rivers. But I'm like, I know she's not shitty. You know what I mean, though.
Yeah. What she was doing, Joan Rivers did, but did better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. She was kind of had big flowery kind of, robes and stuff, right? I remember thinking of Madame the Puppet.
No, you're thinking of her. I always...
She kind of had like a Madame the Puppet thing, right?
Is that from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood?
No, Madam was Waylon Flowers and Madam.
I don't know Waylon Flowers and Madam.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know her. What is it?
I look it up. You know Madam. He was like a ventriloquist, and Madam was his puppet.
Madam Flowers.
Waylon Flowers and Madam.
Oh. Waylon. Oh! Oh, I do! I do know this! Oh! I forgot all about that. Oh.
Oh, yeah, she's an awful-looking puppet.
Yes. And,
frightening.
Oh, and thank God he was born in 1939, so we don't ever have to talk about him. I'm getting rid of this. I can't look at that.
It's a puppet of nightmares.
Yes. And it does...
You kind of do like a Phyllis Diller thing.
Yes, it does look like someone who's had a lot of plastic surgery and is trying to pull off like a Carol Channing cosplay. I remember a Full House episode with Phyllis Diller.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this episode?
No.
The whole gang goes to see Dave performing at a stand-up club. And he's about to go on, but then Phyllis Diller is in the audience, and they say, come on up. So she's, no, it's okay. It's like, come on up. She's like, oh, okay. And she comes on, and she crushes for like 45 minutes, right before Dave, the headliner, is about to go on. And then when Dave gets up, he can't follow her.
No.
It was supposed to be his big night, but Phyllis Diller steals his thunder. And because it's like a G-rated kids show, she does it totally by accident. So mm-hmm. it's just the, bad luck of the draw that the one night he was going to spotlight, she stole his
thunder. It's funny they went with Phyllis Diller as the... It's the 80s. There's comedians everywhere you could have used.
I'm pretty sure they work backwards from we've got Phyllis Diller. We want to do something in a way that... gives her 100 compliments in a row, makes her only show up in one scene, and has everyone individually in the cast say good things about her.
But in the late 80s, was Phyllis Diller really that big that, she was a get? Like, it seems more like maybe Phyllis Diller was blackmailing him or something.
Yeah, even at the time when I was watching, it's like, Phyllis Diller isn't that funny. I mean, I don't know who Eddie Murphy is because I'm not allowed to watch that, but I know he's very popular. If Eddie Murphy was on this episode of Full House, I think it would be more realistic if he was on.
What was it? Where was the show? Was it like a comedy club?
It was a comedy club.
Was it like a casino maybe?
No.
Maybe it was like an older crowd kind of thing.
Yeah. No, they purposely had, if I remember correctly, they had a brick wall in the back to make it look like it was like a New York comedy club. Or a San Francisco comedy club.
Mm-hmm.
And San Francisco in the 80s had a great comedy scene, from what I've heard.
It did.
Yeah.
Was Phyllis Diller dressed like Phyllis Diller for this episode?
Yes.
Like robes and...
Yeah.
Okay. So, like a big wig.
Yeah, but
it'd be weird if she goes out in her, like...
Yeah, I can't tell when someone is wearing a wig, especially an older woman, because I never know if it's like I'm Dolly Parton, this is obviously a wig, I just want to express myself, and how much is I'm trying to hide the fact that my hair is falling out.
Yeah, you don't want to call attention to that kind of thing.
No.
I feel like Roy's kind of had that, though, so there's probably always a wink.
Right. Now, what I don't know is what she used to be like.
Was she like a Foxy Dean back in the day?
Like, you can rewind Betty White's career to see her, like, in a Mary Tyler Moore show. It's like, oh, she was like the sex pod character.
You know, now that you mentioned it, I don't know what young Phyllis Diller looked like. Or did she enter comedy when she was old?
I remember.
Like a Mom's Mabley or Grandma Moses.
I remember hearing Joan Rivers talking about her by saying, like, how much harder you had to be funny and a woman back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. Because people would assume that it was just, like, a gag. Like a female comic was right next to the unknown comic in terms of, we got a guy with a bag on his head, we got a woman, we got all these crazy nutsos.
We got Man and the Puppet.
And next week we got a Negro coming in. I can't end on that. I need to say something else. I can't just sign off with my impression of a mildly racist guy from the
80s. I'm not helping. I'm not helping. No, you're being a character.
I'm being a character, but in this day and age, people don't understand the whole character.
The problem is, do it again. But do a voice.
Do it again?
No, but do a voice this time.
I did do a voice.
It was
a little bit of a gruffness.
Gravel your voice.
Yeah. Well, if I'm going to do it again, I want to do it better. I'll come up with a better joke than just using a crude word.
Negro wasn't a crude word then. It was just what it was.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I got nothing. But okay, I'm gonna look up Phyllis Diller.
Man, you're wasting time now.
Outfits. She was famous for lots of Oh, I'm seeing pictures of her husband. This is not good.
Right.
This is a rabbit hole I didn't want to go down this late at night.
Where's her husband? That's her husband on the right?
No.
Oh. All right, so she performed as a young woman, too. Yeah. Her husband was always, like, she was referenced her husband. That was his name. Right. Fang.
I think she had a gay husband. I'm not sure.
You're thinking of Martha Ray with Mark Harris.
I may be thinking of Joan Rivers.
Joan Rivers didn't have a gay husband.
She didn't?
No, she had a husband that killed himself.
I'm getting all my husbands mixed up.
No, all right. Joan Rivers' husband killed himself.
Okay.
Martha Ray's husband was Mark Harris, who was a much younger gay man.
Okay. And her husband looks unfortunate. But
where is he? Let me see. Let me see this guy. That's not her husband. Is it? That's her.
Is that her as a man?
That's her as a man.
Oh. Okay. Okay.
You're getting very confused.
I am. Oh, here's her husband. Okay.
Where?
There is. That's a man-looking guy.
Yeah. So if Phyllis Diller puts on a bald cap, you would think that, you'd get confused and thinking,
yes.
Oh, that's her husband who looks exactly like her.
I thought it was like a Dennis Leary thing, where he made jokes that his wife looks just like him.
She does,
it's weird.
Like Milhouse's parents.
Yes. Maybe I just have Mickey Mouse on the brain. Because yeah. Mickey and Minnie Mouse, identical except for hats.
And eyelashes.
Yes.
That's what he told him before.
Are there any other, pop culture people who basically have married like their opposite selves.
I know on Three Stooges they frequently fall in love with themselves in wakes.
Maybe is that a better thing to end on than me being racist or my character being racist?
Yeah, you're not racist. Your character was. Yeah, sure. Let's end on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Join us next week for the 1917 podcast when we talk about.
I'll do my recitation of My Dog, Beau.
Oh, that's right. We'll have to do My Dog, Beau. And we will also talk about J. Edgar Hoover. Until next time, ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy.